Well, brethren, when was the last time you were persecuted? I've been persecuted a lot of times, but not for righteousness. Now, we're talking about when's the last time you was persecuted for righteousness? There are, everyone has certain persecutions in everyday life and problems, but for righteousness. If you would turn to Matthew chapter 5, I've talked some about this before. Matthew chapter 5, and in verse 10, and here there's several blessings here. You know, we've talked hunger and thirst and the merciful, the peacemakers. And then it says in verse 10, blessed are those who are persecuted. Blessed for being persecuted. But then here's the kicker that comes in. For righteousness' sake. For righteousness' sake. Persecuted. Well, we might ask, why are righteous people persecuted? They're doing everything right, aren't they? Well, today I want to look at some reasons that maybe the righteous might be persecuted for. Sometimes we might think, oh, we're having a trial. I've thought that. This is a horrible trial. But some of the things is just being human, right? Some of you remember the camping days at Big Sandy? Went there a number of years, and one year we was able to get this little travel trailer, you know, a little run room, and had it all figured out. Three kids, my wife got it all arranged and neat, and everything's there, and we had the supplies, you know, what we thought we'd need for the family. We bought bags of granola. Bulk, had them in plastic bags there lined up on the counter, and she's going to take the three kids, or actually just two then. I didn't have the others yet. They were coming. But she took, she did. She took three and left the youngest with me, like maybe 2 years old, one and a half. And so while she's gone, I'm looking at my shoes. You know, I need to polish those shoes. And so I had the kiwi, can of kiwi, and there's a little cook stove there. I'll just heat, you know, it was cold that morning. I'll just heat that up. You know, I turned the fire on, undo it, and kind of went about my business, and I didn't take the lid off. Pretty soon the lid blows off. And with it, chunks of flaming kiwi all over. Hit those bags of granola. They split open, gushed out on the floor. And, you know, I had a little fire going everywhere. See, I thought, well, that was a trial. No, that was human stupidity. That wasn't really a trial, was it? And then I thought, oh, man, she just had this place cleaned up. And I get the fire out, and then I got to clean up all the granola and my Darlene, my youngest, was sitting there on a bunk bed just watching, you know. So, I mean, yeah, maybe it was a trial, but really that's just human stuff, isn't it? Just being human at times. So I wanted to talk about a few things today about why a person might be persecuted. One point might be just because of our own nature will persecute us, and we'll talk about that. Our own nature will persecute us for being righteous at times, and also then we have the world we live in. It's certainly probably most everyone here have lived through that. And then who's the one behind the persecution? And I'd like to talk about, too, why does God allow persecution? Is there a benefit there? So basically, my title is The Persecuted Christian. It's not a question, it's just like a statement, The Persecuted Christian. And I want to talk about why Christians are persecuted. Why Christians are persecuted. So we have the persecuted Christian, and why is that? Well, as I mentioned earlier, our own nature, our physical life, just being human, will bring certain persecutions on us. You know, following Jesus does not remove us from what? The storms of life. It's that, you know, following Jesus, then, oh, well, we just got smooth sailing here as a human being. No, it doesn't remove us from that. Some examples I think about. We had a house guest for about 3 weeks, and everything that he needed was in a bag he carried with him. I'm talking birth certificates, IDs, everything. And he takes an Uber cab, and he gets there, and he gets out and leaves the bag in the Uber. What's an Uber, anyway? I found out that's a taxi. Anyway, he leaves the bag in the Uber. I mean, when he gets there, he's sitting at our table, and his head's hanging down. He don't know what he'll do. You know, everything is in that bag. So I'd say that was a trial, but it involved human negligence. But, I mean, an angel could have tapped him and said, hey, your bag, you know, everything you got's there. You're going to be in trouble without that. So, you know, there he was. And just following Jesus doesn't keep us from getting into situations at times. Remember the sinking ship? I might turn to, just Matthew 8. We're in Matthew 5. If you look at Matthew 8. In Matthew 8, probably in 24. Well, let's look at 22. But Jesus said to him, follow me and let the dead bury the dead. And then when he got into the boat, his disciples followed him. These men were following Jesus into a boat, right? And suddenly in verse 24, a great tempest arose on the sea, so that the boat was covered with waves, but he was asleep. So even though they were doing what Jesus said, actually followed him in the boat, according to this particular one, they got in trouble. Suddenly a windstorm came, and the boat was sinking. Well, you remember Psalms chapter 34 and verse 19. I don't have to turn back there, but if you want, you could read that. Psalms 34, verse 19. Many are the afflictions of the righteous. Yeah, it says, of the righteous. But the Lord will deliver him out of them all. So if we read that story, we'd see that when they woke Jesus up, then he rebuked the waves, didn't he? And so he delivered them. But our own mind and our own nature, I mean, just being human, we're following Jesus, that doesn't mean that we won't run into some physical problems. Remember Romans chapter 8, which I will turn to, and we talk about this probably many times, where we realize that our own natural mind is hostile toward God. So if, say, we're obeying God, we're trying to do right, our own mind is going to be hostile to us. In a sense. Is that what it says? Romans 8, verse 7. Because the carnal or the natural mind is enmity against God. And it says it is not subject to the law of God. Our own natural mind, we're following Christ. Christ is living in us. The carnal mind doesn't like it, does it? For it is not subject to the law of God, nor indeed can be. It can't even be. It's only that we have Christ in us that we're able to keep God's way of life. So there it is in verse 8. So then those who are in the flesh cannot please God. If we're just going to remain in the flesh without God being in us, without God's Spirit, we're just not going to be able to please God. But in verse 9, but you are not in the flesh, but in the Spirit. There's that F again. Indeed, the Spirit of God dwells in you. See, there's the F. But if the Spirit dwells in you, then you're able to do that. Now, if anyone does not have the Spirit of Christ, he is not his. That's just pretty plain. Remember, I should turn back there. Jeremiah 17. I know if you've been around in the church, exposed to it, you've read this and heard it. But let's look at Jeremiah 17. I know it's here somewhere. I mean, it's a big, long book. I ought to be able to find it. Yeah, there it is. I mean, it's not like Jude. But I can find Jude. It's way at the back, right? But Jeremiah 17, and I'm sure I don't have to read this to you, but I would like to. Jeremiah 17, verse 9. Because here again, we see that our own self can be a persecuting agent on a Christian. Verse 9, the heart is deceitful above all things. It's the attitude, the emotion of our own natural mind, and desperately wicked, and who can know it? It's like we can't even recognize it at times. I'm sure you've had times that later you think, what was I thinking? Why did I say that? Or why did I do that? You know, we can't even recognize it at times. But that's where God's Spirit, of course, is going to keep us and get us out of those kind of problems. And it says, verse 10, I, the Eternal, search the heart. I test the mind. Right there could be a hint about why we're allowed to get into persecutions. Because it says, I test the mind, even to give every man according to his ways, according to the fruit of his doing. So our own nature can be hostile toward Christ in us and what we are trying to do. So I just say, well, keep your eye on yourself. You've heard, you know, keep your enemies close to you so you know what they're doing. Well, you know, recognize your own mind. Keep your enemies close. Another way that we're persecuted for righteousness is the world. Just the world we live in is a persecuting agent many times. The world will persecute. Let's look at John chapter 15. John chapter 15 and verse 18. I forgot to look at the clock when I walked up here, but I think we'll figure it out. John chapter 15, verse 18. Here's Jesus speaking. Verse 17, he says, "These things I command you, that you love one another." Verse 18, "If the world hates you, you know that it hated me before it hated you." So we're in a world, if you're living a righteous life, there's a certain amount of hate just from the world, isn't there? "If the world hates you, you know that it hated me before it." And verse 19, "If you were of the world, it would love you." There it is. If you're of the world, there's going to be some organization, some people that'll kind of help you and look after you, won't they? "Because you are not of the world, but I chose you out of the world. Therefore, the world hates you." So even the world can be a persecuting agent. And we weren't taken out of the world. Jesus even said when he prayed to the Father that, "I don't ask you to take them out of the world, but to keep them from the evil one." Because the evil one could blot us out. And just the world, the nature of the world, not necessarily everybody's wicked and vile, something like that, but just the nature of the world. I know a man that he was going to God's festival, and his wife just didn't understand it, didn't like it, the idea. And she just said, "If you go to that, I won't be here when you return." So, I mean, he went. He didn't have very little money. He wasn't really prepared for that. You know, he hadn't been around that long. She said, "Well, I won't be here." So he went, just, you know, with whatever he had. So, you know, he didn't have a tent, couldn't rent a hotel. So he took the back seat out of the car. Okay. This is in the old days when cars had trunks, you know. Took a seat and stood him up behind the front seat. And then that opened up into the trunk. And then he could put an old cot in there. And so he could sleep in there with the trunk lid open and his head was sticking out the trunk. Now, any of you went to Big Sandy, you could comprehend that as being true. Otherwise, you might say, "You're kidding me on this. You're making this story up." And, you know, it can be cold in Big Sandy. It can be hot. Well, it was cold then. He had frost on his body when he woke up. But he went. And was that woman just a vicious, mean person? No. It was just the influence and the world, and she thought it was totally ridiculous that he would do that. Look at Proverbs 29, if you would. Proverbs chapter 29. It's just that the world, the way the world is, some of the things we do does not make sense, really. I mean, it just wouldn't make sense to them. Proverbs chapter 29, verse 27. It says here, "An unjust man is an abomination to the righteous." Oh, yeah, we can be righteous and then someone unjust, well, they can be really like an abomination to us. "And he who is upright in the way is an abomination to the wicked." So there it is. Someone doing the right thing can be like an abomination. You know, you're pretty sick if you're doing that. You know, you're going to not allow your children to do this or that. You know, what kind of person are you? But he is upright in the way can be an abomination to the wicked. And, of course, even prosperity in this world can be a type of persecution. in the sense that it distracts and it takes us away from where we're going. I would like to turn back to Deuteronomy 8, see what God said to Israel. And the prediction he made here, and it turned out to be correct because Israel was a physical nation, this physical world. So in Deuteronomy chapter 8, and in verse 10, here's the thing, when a person obeys God, there are blessings, many blessings for obeying God. But there are trials that maybe come before those blessings. So God says here in Deuteronomy 8, verse 10, he says, when you have eaten and are full, that sounds like being blessed, doesn't it? Then you shall bless the Eternal, your God, for the good land which he has given you. So when things go good, that's when we should be thankful and be blessing God. But you know what our nature is? To forget about God. We don't need him now, do we? We got the chicken in the pot. We got the house. We got the job. He said, that's when you should be thankful. And that's one of the things, our own nature is so, it goes opposite of what we should do. The more we're blessed, the more thankful we should be. But our nature seems to want to forget God. And in verse 11, beware that you do not forget the Eternal your God. So we can forget. And it's easy to forget when things are going pretty well. Beware you not forget the Eternal your God by not keeping his commandments. If we don't keep his commandments, then we're no longer righteous, are we? Beware you keep his commandments, his judgments, his statutes, which I command you today. Lest when you have eaten, in verse 12, and are full, and you've built your beautiful houses and dwell in them, and when your herds and your flocks multiply, and your silver and your gold are multiplied, and all that you have is multiplied. And verse 14, when your heart is lifted up and you forget your God, who brought you out of Egypt, who led you through the terrible wilderness, and those that God calls realize that we were brought out of Egypt as much as these Israelites. We were in Egypt, and we were slaves in Egypt. And he goes on to talk about how he fed them through the wilderness, took care of them, and then in verse 16, who fed you in the wilderness with manna, which your fathers did not know, that he might humble you and that he might test you to do you good in the end. That says a lot, to do you good in the end. Right now, he was saying they were having a tough time, but it was to do them good in the end. And he just says in verse 18 that you should remember your God. For he's the one that has given you power to get wealth. That could be physically and spiritually. So the world is there. And it can be a, even prosperity can be a persecuting product to on a person that's living a righteous life. You remember the guy there in Luke chapter 12? I probably don't need to turn there, but this guy, he was so prosperous his barns wouldn't hold it. He said, well, I'm going to build bigger barns. I should turn there. Luke chapter 12. I know everybody's is familiar with this, but it's a good reminder. In Luke chapter 12 and verse 18, so he said, I will do this, I will pull down my barns, and I'll build greater, and there I will store all my crops and my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, you have many goods laid up for many years. Take your ease. Eat, drink, and be merry. See, when we get everything going good, our own nature is going to say, well, take it easy, fella. I mean, you know, you've been there. You've done that. You've done your service. And now God has filled your barns and you have plenty to eat and drink. Take your ease. But in verse 20, but God said to him, fool, this night your soul or your life will be required of you. Then whose will all these things be which you provided? So physical things can give us an idea that we don't need God, that we can carry on without it. And verse 21, so is he who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God. In other words, you can't take it with you. That doesn't mean it's wrong to save and to take care and to prepare. I think there's plenty of Proverbs that teach us that we should. But see, what is the purpose of storing up? So we can just sail on out of life without service, without thinking about God. Another thing that persecutes and is really behind most of the persecution for righteousness is Satan, who persecutes. He does persecute. I saw an old article from way back in the church, probably was printed in the 60s or 50s, and it says Satan's fate. It says God is directly allowing Satan to be used as his instrument in blinding the world. So as the lady that said, I won't be here when you get back. She was just blinded to the truth. It wasn't like she was super wicked or anything like that. But he's as an instrument in blinding the world so that lessons of mankind will be so firmly and completely etched in its own blood that there will never again be a society existing in total rebellion against God. Everybody here has been called to be servants of God and actually to be leaders of God, you know. So Satan is a persecutor. Look at Revelation chapter 12, and we can see just one. We know what in Christ there, and we won't turn there. Matthew 4, first thing Christ had when he began his ministry was to face Satan. Satan had his manipulations that would sidetrack, and one of them was offering the kingdoms of the world, of course. But in Revelation chapter 12, in verse 13, now when the dragon saw that he had been cast to the earth, he persecuted the woman, the people of God, who it means, who gave birth to the male child. See, so he persecuted the woman. But the woman was given two wings of a great eagle. Now, I don't know how long the woman was persecuted before she was given the wings. Doesn't say, does it? But he said he did persecute her to fly into the wilderness in her place, where she is nourished for a time and times and half time. Yes, all at once the woman was taken, because Satan would have destroyed her. And in verse 17, though, it says, "And then the dragon was enraged with the woman, and he went to make war." Now, he went to make war, not just a little slap on the wrist, with the rest of her offspring, who what? Who keep the commandments of God and have the testimony of Jesus Christ. See, they were keeping God's commandments, but Satan was allowed to make war. You say, why in the world would God ever allow that? See, it shows that this world and the spirit being behind this world is allowed at times to persecute the woman and persecute her offering. You know, and Satan uses people to do that. You know, he doesn't walk in here and he's visible. Or on your job, you don't see him. Oh, yeah, there's Satan here today. I got to be careful. No, he uses the surroundings, the people, and whoever. One member's mate, I know, he another festival incident. The wife, I'm not picking on women, it just happened because I'm a guy, I hear about what happens to guys. I haven't heard about how many women have been persecuted by husbands, and it's probably much more than the few men there are. But he was going, and she hid all of his clothes, car keys. He showed up at the feast with a t-shirt and the pants he had on. That was it. He's at the feast. And I just happened to see him. I said, what are you doing here? You know, I mean, where's your clothes? But so, and again, is this some kind of a very vicious, awful person? No. I knew the woman later, and it was that influence. And Satan uses people. And I think in that case, he was using her because there was all kinds of incidents from throwing plates to physical abuse. And so he arrived at the feast with his jeans and t-shirts, but he did go. So why would God allow so much stuff as this? Well, persecution, I would say a point I would talk about, humbles us, keeps us in touch with God. As he warned Israel, when everything's great and the barns are full, the house is built, and you're ready to take it easy, then something happens. I think of Fiddler on the Roof, and I can never say the guy's name. Is it Tavia or something like that? And, you know, he's just, they're Jewish, and they're just having, he said, oh, if I was a rich man, you know, and he goes on and on. And he said, you know, I know we're the chosen people. He said, but could you choose someone else for a while? You know, you might think that, hey, God, why don't you choose somebody else for a while? I'll just go along here, then you can come back. No, can you choose someone else for a while? No, he's chosen us. Sitting right here, he's chosen us. So he allows it at times. Let's look at James chapter 1. We'll just see some of this. James chapter 1. And in verse 2. Now this is a hard one here. You can practice on this one. My brethren, James chapter 1, verse 2. Count it all joy when you fall into various trials. Wow, that's a pretty big order. Count it all joy when you fall into various trials. It's like putting it to proof. A trial is putting it to proof. What did God say? I won't turn back there to Abraham after he was going to sacrifice his son. God said, now I know you will keep me. You say, well, God knows everything. I don't know. It says there, now I know. If he knew everything, would he just put somebody through it? I won't debate that. In verse 3, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience or endurance. If you're going to be a soldier, or you're going to be a king or a priest, you're going to have patience, because you'll be dealing with people just like you are. And you need a lot of patience. If I'm out to deal with somebody like me, I need some patience. I don't need to get all mad because the railroad train is stopped in my path and I can't get through. You know? No, I've got to have some patience. But let patience have its perfect work, that you may be perfect or complete or mature, lacking nothing. So see, there's reasons for this. Count it joy. And you know, the Apostle Paul, I think we'd all say, well, that's an example I wish I could look up to. But in 2 Corinthians chapter 12, we could turn there, that the Apostle Paul wrote how many books here? The epistles? Yeah, more than I've written, for sure. or even Peter. I mean, Peter, oh yeah. But anyway, 2 Corinthians chapter 12, in verse 7, and lest I should be exalted above measure. And he was talking about all the things that he possibly could boast about. You know, he actually had consultation with Jesus Christ, if I'm remembering right. He could have been boasting, but he said here in verse 7, and lest I should be exalted above measure by the abundance of the revelations, a thorn in the flesh was given me. A thorn in the flesh was given. And just what this is, I don't know, but it says, a messenger of Satan to buffet me. To buffet me. Well, and it could be in the margin, it says beat. I mean, this could have been brutal. Lest I be exalted above measure. I would be exalted above what I should be exalted. He was to be respected as a minister, but he could have been exalted above measure. In verse 9, he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for my strength is made perfect in weakness. Then he goes on, therefore, most gladly, I'd rather boast in my infirmities, that the power of Christ may rest upon me. Yes, there's a humbling situation here at times, much as we wouldn't want to have it. Persecution, God may deem as necessary at times, or allow. And you say, well, why would the great God, why would he want to humble people? Well, look at Isaiah 57, which I've turned there a few times in my life, because it's something I think we should remember. Isaiah 57, in verse 15. And you notice here, who's speaking here? Isaiah 57, verse 15. For thus says the high and lofty one. That doesn't sound like humility, does it? The high and lofty one, who inhabits eternity. I mean, do you get any higher than that? I mean, who's exalted more than that? Whose name is holy? And then, I always like what the rest says. I dwell in high and holy places. And who does he dwell with? With him who has a contrite and humble spirit. This most exalted being in the whatever the universe that ever was, who does he dwell with? He dwells with the humble and the contrite spirit. That's who he dwells with. And I think that all of us would want that person dwelling with us, for him to dwell with us. He dwells with the contrite and the humble spirit. Not with the exalted one who's going to just build bigger barns and live a life of ease. No. No, he dwells with the humble. As we see, why is this going on? Well, we're being made into something we're not. Look at Colossians chapter 1. Colossians chapter 1. Yes, Colossians chapter 1. See, we're being made into the very body of Christ, aren't we? I think I'm going the right direction here. Where is Colossians? There it is. Well, anyway, it's after Ephesians, okay? Colossians chapter 1 in verse 24. And again we see, I now rejoice in my sufferings for you and fill up in my flesh what is lacking in afflictions of Christ for the sake of his body, which is his church. Christ's body is his church. That's us. We're Christ's body, aren't we? For which I became a minister according to the stewardship from God, which is given to me for you, fulfilling the word of God. And for 26, for the mystery which has been hidden from the ages, from generations, but now has been revealed to his saints, to them God will, verse 27, to make known what are the riches of the glory of this mystery among the Gentiles, which is Christ in you, the hope of glory. So when we come here today on the Sabbath, this is a chance to meet God, you could say face to face, because God is in us. That's the reason we go ahead and take a bath and kind of clean up a little bit if we're going to meet God, you know. We hopefully would do the best we could. So we need to be patient, like Christ is. And if you want to write down 1 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 21, 22, we suffer patiently like Christ did. And we could turn to Hebrews, which I probably will. But this is patience. You know, we have to ask sometime. We ask God, God, give me faith. Well, for faith to grow, many times we have to be put in situations that where we need faith. Or how would it ever grow? I don't know if I, 1 Peter 2, I didn't turn there, 21. Anyway, I didn't want to go too much over time. But if we ask for faith, then sometimes we have to be in situations that would require faith. If our job, it might require faith. So I was talking to someone, and they just had to walk away, you know, if they were going to keep the Sabbath. And so we might ask God for wisdom. We might have to have situations that would require wisdom if we were going to develop that. And if we was going to ask for patience, may require times that we have to wait. We have to wait on God, or we have to wait on other things. So I would like to turn to Hebrews chapter 11. Hebrews chapter 11, verse 5. Yes, verse 5 and 6. Hebrews 11, verse 5 and 6. By faith, Enoch was taken away so that he did not see death and was not found because God had taken him. For before he was taken, he had this testimony that he pleased God. In verse 6, but without faith it is impossible to please him. For he who comes to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. So those things many times require trials or persecution, whatever you would want to call it. So why are Christians persecuted? Well, we need to change our nature, don't we? Why? Because our own nature can be a persecuting factor to us. And this world, we have to live in it. It just has a nature to persecute someone that's living righteous, whether it be out of jealousy or they feel like that you're better than they are because you obey God or whatever. And, of course, we have the God of this world, and he's there to persecute. And, you know, I just heard a sermon the other day. I thought it might be a good example. A quote about Alexander the Great. Remember, we're being prepared to be kings and priests, right? Jesus is called the Lion of Judah. But this sermon mentioned, I think is a quote from Alexander the Great. He said, I'll never fear any army of lions that's led by a sheep, you know. But he said, I will be afraid of an army of sheep that's led by a lion. Well, we got to be that. We're going to be leading sheep. We are sheep. We're being led. But we're being led by a lion. And someday we're going to have to be a lion to lead sheep. So he's saying, hey, it's a guy at the front who I'm worried about, you know. So he'd be afraid of an army of sheep led by a lion. That'd be a combo, wouldn't it? Hope the lion wouldn't get hungry. You know. So I think you get what Alexander the Great made, because he was great, right? He knew he was great, so he was patting himself probably on the back there, wasn't he? But remember the wind, storm, sinking the ship. What? Then Christ stepped out and he stilled the water. Hey, we're dying. The ship's going down. But then there's Christ before they drowned. He steps out. Remember the man whose wife would not be there. If you go, I won't be here when you get back. He comes in. And looks, and she's in the kitchen cooking supper for him. I mean, is that a beautiful sight or not? And then he was there, his wife, but I won't be here. And she's there cooking supper for him when he's been gone a week or more. Yeah. The man that was naked, basically, his wife's. So got rid of his clothes. He comes back. He don't know what's going to happen. Hey, his clothes are pressed and hanging there for him, waiting for him. And, of course, I don't know if I mentioned this, but one going to take their kids out for this festival, and the superintendent says, well, you'll be getting a call from the attorney general when you get home. Well, the attorney general never called, so it didn't happen. And then the guy with the Uber, I mean, he's everything. He's devastated. And we get a call from Houston. The dispatcher with Uber said, "We found this guy. He's got this package." I mean, it could have been hilarious, but it wasn't. And said, "We've located him." And okay, yeah. He said, "Well, he's going to bring it to your house." And the Uber driver said, "You know, I had other passengers in here, and nobody touched that. I didn't even know it was back there, but nothing had been bothered." So, I mean, you know, you never know where the trial will end. And, of course, if he hadn't got the package back, God would have worked it out some other way. But, I mean, you think, well, that's gone, you know. If it had been over in Jordan or somewhere, I think the driver would have chased him down and given it, because if you get caught stealing there, they chop your hand off. But here, you know, it's maybe wouldn't be that big a deal. But see, God works things out. There's a trial, and then there's an ending. And sometimes the ending may not be until the resurrection, but there's going to be an ending. So, brethren, I just want to say, brethren, blessed are the persecuted for righteousness' sake, and because it says, "For theirs is the kingdom of God."